Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
So what can you actually do when you are concerned about your first name and you actually want to change your first name and you want to change to something completely different? Well, I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with the first name, Jane. I think it's wonderful, but you could always be J.B. Warren, I suppose. Yeah, that's a little nod
that
ahead
for a while.
To, yeah, the wonderful Jane Baird Warren, who's with us today, officially our author of the week. How are you, Jane?
I'm very well, thank you. And I'm delighted to be in England again, if only through a Zoom connection.
Well, exactly. And there's a spiritual link there. I'm sure that Zoom and the spiritual notion of Zoom will work on that sort of way. Because, of course, you've got Scottish parentage and Norwegian parentage, I believe.
I do. You've looked at the website. I do. And I lived in England in Surrey for a few years.
Oh. So there we are. So I don't know if you recognize what I've put up behind me, basically, because I thought in reference to obviously your Scottish background, we'd have a bit of Edinburgh Castle there.
Castle.
So there you go. It's always important to keep that going.
Sweet,
so we've been joined, as I say, by our level three. We're heading into our level three English and creative writing student at the University of Lincoln. That's, of course, Kayleigh Mansell. We've also got a young lady who's releasing her single this very day. Her latest single is released, Golden Sun, is being released at this moment. That's Chloe Rose. How are you, Chloe?
Very well, thank you. And looking forward to speaking to Jane as well.
Exactly. But Jane, very much the focus is on your good self for this particular feature. And let's start off with that initial. I mean, it's almost like a how-to book, isn't it? How to be a goldfish. And yet it isn't. That's deceptive in so many ways. I mean, you know, as a goldfish owner of many a year, just the one, Spotty, he lived for 14 years. I thought, oh, it's going to be all about how to be a goldfish, how to get through that whole process. But talk us through this awesome text, which is going to be released very shortly.
Well, thank you. That's sweet. And I got beat to the gold goldfish thing by Ted Lasso. I got really jumped on that one. Have you seen that show? Where the goldfishes, it's all over the internet now about how goldfishes forget everything that, goldfish forget everything that happens to them momentarily. And so they can just meet new people all the time. And isn't life grand and forget all injuries?
Yeah, I mean, I think Finding Dory was something which played on the same sort of thing, basically, the Finding Nemo thing. Well, I will refute that. I mean, Spotty, who lost all his spots, etc., but he still remembered us. So there we are. Practical experience would actually negate that. But let's not go into a sort of battle on this side of things. Anyway, let's talk about your own text, though.
So goldfish, the title came from just something my dad did when I was a kid. We had a cottage near Georgian Bay, and it had a pond. And he was a do-it-yourselfer guy, and he was curious about goldfish. So he bought a bunch of store-bought goldfish, tossed them in the pond, and watched as they grew and grew and grew to fill the space. And that's the, without hitting a kid on the head with a metaphor, that's the metaphor of this book. These kids are thrown into a new environment, and they rise to the occasion. They become a goldfish. They grow to fill the environment that they have to in order to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, Lizzie, of course, seems to get the sharp end of the stick to start off with when her class being assigned a family tree project. She knows that hers will become fodder for Scotch Gully's town gossips. And actually, when you are of that age, we'll talk to Kayleigh and Chloe in a few moments about that, of course. But it is something where, you know, the shame, the humiliation, the embarrassment, perhaps most of all the embarrassment, can be quite traumatic for young adults, I would have thought.
I think so. I mean, I think I was a pretty ballsy kid who just sort of barreled through life and no matter what. But I have distinct memories of those times when somebody did something or said something to me that was not terribly nice, like when they make fun of how I danced or the way I looked or something. It's stuck.
Or just packing your suitcase, for instance, you know? I mean, that's very important.
My suitcase, yes. Yes, for anybody who hasn't read it, I had a Scots mum and a Norwegian dad who met in Toronto many years ago, and they both never lost their accents. And my mum's got thicker every time her sister came to visit. But when I was a kid, my dad would pack, you would go on holiday and you'd pack your suitcase, and your suitcase is what it was. And for all I knew, that's all everybody had. Until my friends let me know. Yes, definitely,
well,
let me know.
At the end of the day, you can pack your suitcase, you can go spelunking, It's not going to work well, is it? I mean, before we actually find out about your own spelunking experiences, Chloe, have you ever spelunked?
Spelunked. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
No.
What do we mean? Explain further about this spelunked thing. I
Well
want to know a
said,
bit more.
Kaylee.
I'll
Are
take
you? I
that.
mean, yeah. In
That's
Chesterfield,
okay.
yeah, a keen spelunker.
No. In Chesterfield, in general life, don't think I'm much of an explorer.
It's clearly the stalactites, stalagmites coming down, stalagmites going up. Jane, is it true that you just wanted to be explore caves because you like the sound of the word spelunk?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I also read a book that I about a girl who I think she her father flew from place to place in the plane and had he might have been a doctor, but anyway, I decided after reading that book that that's what I was going to do. I was going to be a doctor who flew to remote areas on my own in my own plane. And my sisters laughed at me because I lived in the clouds myself. And yeah, if I like the sound of a word, that's what I was going to do. Kaylee, where is Chesterfield? Where is it?
So I'm right next to Sheffield. I'm like
Okay,
up
got it.
above Midlands. I'm a little bit far. Whole
Okay.
new world around
Still
here.
trying to place different places from
Oh,
memory in my head. Okay.
I've lived here my whole life and I could not tell you where you are right now, to be honest. I'm really bad with it. So
That's
don't
okay.
care. When all's said and done, Jane, asking the question, where are you, is both philosophical and geographical. It's got a number of key things there. I mean, in so many ways, I've tried to work out why the meaning of life might be considered to be in Grimsby and or Cleethorpes, and Chloe's consistently tried to explain it to me, and I don't know. It's just that's another line entirely still.
Oh dear.
So it goes. Chloe, we'll turn to you. Any questions you want to put to Jane about her work, the
Yes.
being a first generation Canadian, any of those factors?
Absolutely. I was reading the write-up on it that Alex has just touched on now, and the book it sounds brilliant. What sort of made you want to write for young kids and adults as well? What was it about that you thought, right, this is the route I'm going to go down?
God, I wish it was that simple, Chloe. I started out writing short fiction and poetry and publishing in that genre. Then I decided that I better legitimize myself. So I took a master's of fine arts. And when I did that, I just found a really, my mother told me my whole life, you should write for children. I went, no, not me. I don't want to do that. But I had this guy called Glenn Hoosier as a prof, and he was so great. And he was gentle, and I value kindness above all things. And I just kind of fell in love with it and started dabbling. But why I wrote this book, I think we can probably blame Donald Trump because I started out wanting to write something fun and adventurous. I just wanted kids to be able to escape and play, like I wanted to escape and play. And then the number 45 campaigned and made fun of disabled reporters and women and I just got my back up, and slowly, it wasn't a conscious decision. Slowly, things kind of morphed into the book that I had no intention of putting there originally into my sweet little Harriet the Spy type mystery. And the mystery then had undertones. Hopefully, actually, I think I am convinced there's still fun. It's a sweet book, but it deals with prejudicial laws on the LGBTQ community, on women having their kids taken away with them, forced adoptions, and on British home children. So Donald Trump started it, but I finished it.
That's great though, because it lets even young kids like face that these things and know that what these things are happening and them getting that knowledge of that as well. I think that's something great that you can learn even as a young kid if that's the issues that you're
Thanks,
exploring
Chloe.
in your books. That's yeah, honestly, it's great. And thank you for
Well, thanks,
well,
Chloe.
Donald Trump. Oh, you're welcome. Usually would think, oh dear, but if he's given the inspiration and it's worked brilliant, he was good for that, which is awesome.
I was going to say, on that basis alone, I mean, obviously, Mr. Trump's had one or two problems with the FBI recently. They've visited him a couple of times and so on. I mean, clearly, this could actually just be a bit of a shining light. You could actually say, well, at least you're responsible for inspiring this particular book. So well done. It's all good. It's nice
So
and dark.
negative inspiration works just as well. Yeah, I think the idea was the tipping point for me was when they started south of the border. I'm in Canada now, FYI. Everything came up to bear on transgender weren't allowed in the military, and there's who gets to use what bathroom in North Carolina. And I think I got a little fussy, and I thought, well, we've done this before, guys. We did this 40 years ago with the gay community, and don't we remember how ridiculous we sounded? Not we, me, but we as a society sounded prejudicially. And now, 40 years later, we have gay marriages, we have Will and Grace on television, we have it's accepted, it's normal, it's perfect. And I think 40 years in the future, we're going to look back and go, boy, were we ever ignorant about how we treated transgender kids and adults. So the way I structured the book was a kid reads it now, looking back to a book set in 1981, which is considered historical, which is just like mind-blowing. But then in 1981, those kids are looking back 40 years earlier when other things were happening. So
There
we're
was a
getting to
Second World
watch.
War going on, Joe.
Exactly. And in Canada, there were forced adoptions, and we were getting the last trickle of British home children coming to Canada and growing up and trying to find out who they were and where they came from. So yeah, it was a conscious choice, but again, it sounds really heavy, and it's not. I'm hoping you find it light and humorous and funny and still carries a message somewhere down the line.
So let's turn to Kaylee then. You've been sitting listening to this whole system, probably sort of wondering whether there are any sort of caves around Chesterfield you can check out some spelunking things for. Any questions from yourself?
Yeah, I have two. They're not really related to each other, which I think you might like the disparity of them. So you've said before that you're very much interested in people and kind of the inner workings of humanity and kind of how people conduct themselves. Obviously, that shows in your writing, talking about how society deal with certain issues and problems. And you also said that you just then you had hesitation writing for children. And immediately I feel like a lot of writers are like, no, never ever, me included. So my question is, what do you think is the reason that people are afraid to write for children? Do you think that it's the implication of that socialization stage of life where you learn a lot of important things and you could potentially learn some of the atrocities of the world, like you said yourself, that the things like an American child, for example, learning about the inner workings of politics and stuff. Do you think that people struggle to separate kind of the sadness of life with teaching children about life, if that makes sense?
Well, it makes perfect sense, and it's a genius question. I just don't think I have a genius answer because I think my hesitation had nothing to do with that. It was because it was ego driven. I wanted to be a serious writer. I was going to be the
Yeah,
next Margaret
completely.
Atwood, so I had to publish literature and blah, blah, blah. And I just thought if I just didn't think about it. I never considered it. And even when I started writing, I never considered anything pejorative about writing for children versus writing for adults until recently. And bless her cotton socks, Ellie, if you're watching this, I'm sticking out my tongue at you. My sister asked me, she said, well, you're not going to write for children your whole life, are you? And I went, well, why not? So it's as though this was a sec, I never experienced this before. So this was a lesser thing to do. So that's my sort of ego-driven answer. But I also think that when you start doing exactly what you've described so brilliantly, it's hard. You have to really think, what can I cover? What can I actually write about for kids? And the answer seems to be, if you handle it well, absolutely everything. From, I mean, there's writers in America writing about heroin addiction, and I have a friend, Angela Cerrito, who wrote about Polish children in the ghettos in World War II. And I mean, brilliant stuff, but it's targeted, age appropriate for kids. So nothing's off limits if you handle it right. What do you write? I'm curious. What do you like to write? Ooh.
Well, for my degree, I kind of write all over the place. So I've wrote my first script recently, which was very fun. But genre-wise, sci-fi, dystopia, very much turning the world on its head the way that I think we should, because the world seems to crumble most days. So that kind of thing. But I think that's as well, because if I thought of writing for a child, I'd be like, I'd struggle to, you know, think of things in a childish, because I'm so, my writing is so, you know, very much transforming a dystopia and making, like, relating it to how totalitarian we can be sometimes, if you know what I mean.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. But I was gonna say as well, because of writers like you, I do the degree I do, because when I was younger, I would never, you know, see like sometimes real life within literature. And I think it's so important, because now, because I read at such a young age about people of my age, I'm now doing what I do. So I just wanted to commend you on that. I think it's great. I think it's brilliant. And I'm sure you agree that it's a good living to make when it's so much fun. But yeah, my second question, nothing to do with any of that, is I'm curious about your transformation to veganism, because it's quite a leap, and I think a lot of people are afraid to make it. A few of my good friends are vegan, and I think it feels sometimes quite just a different world entirely. It feels like such a commitment, and it's such a commendable commitment. And I'm just curious, what prompted you? What keeps you sticking at it? You know, maybe it's not as hard as some people think it is.
It can be. No, it's vegans are the butt of jokes in situation comedy, aren't they? Vegans. So I started because of a certain age, your blood pressure starts to creep up a little bit, and I didn't want to be medicated. That's my Norwegian dad in my ear: don't take drugs, don't take medicine. And so my doctor, who's this really cool lady, she's since gone, but she said, well, just try this for a while and see what happens. And 2 weeks on a strictly vegan diet, my blood pressure was perfect, and it has been ever since.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I know, it's really weird, not to mention that all sorts of things. And then, you know, old broad, at a certain age, you go in and you have things like colonoscopies, and the first thing the internist does is they cross their arms and said, how much dairy do you eat? And I said, oh, none. And they went, oh, that's wonderful. So I thought, okay, we're going to stick down this path. We'll stay a little healthier to write a little longer. But it's a lot of work. Here's the thing, if you ever want to try, your taste buds reproduce and replace themselves completely, I think, in less than 2 weeks. I've got the days wrong. It could be 3 days, it could be 3 weeks.
Wow.
So basically, things when you start trying veganism that really taste terrible, you don't notice it after a while, because your taste buds have been replaced. I apologize.
And somebody's obviously phoning up there from a vegan agency to actually cope and address the whole sort of system, which is fine. We can actually cope with this. It's always nice to actually address these kind of things in a live, genuine routine, you see. And clearly, somebody's saying, Jane, talk about veganism, be positive, etc. It's all good. I'm more interested in the purple dye and how you met your husband, because you had your arm dyed purple.
Oh, okay. In high school, I had no idea what I wanted to be. I applied, so this relates to that, believe it or not, a bit of a lead-in. I was kind of a fuzzy kid. I was good in math. I was good in science. So I applied to aerospace engineering at University of Toronto. And because, like all kids my age, I was reading Ayn Rand when I was in high school, I was applied to the one course in the world that taught a combined major of philosophy and physics. Again, University of Toronto. My guidance counselor said, you know what, I would really like you to try engineering. I didn't know what an engineer was. Nobody in my sister went to university, but she was the first
one.
Did
it sound nice though, Jane? Was it like a spelunker? Did it have a nice sound to yourself?
No, I actually didn't care. I just thought, I'm going away to university. I'm leaving this small town forever. It was good. But I got there, didn't much like it. But one of the things you had to do in first year engineering to mark yourself out on campus as an engineer, they called us plumbers. And the idea was you would stick a hand in a vat of purple dye, and it, like the man, the tidy bowl man who's in fixing your toilet, who has the dyed blue water in your toilet. And I think, I can't remember what I wrote on the webpage, but I kind of refused. I didn't want to do it. And I'm not very tall and I'm not very big. And so the guys just, and there was only 10 or so women in engineering. They just picked me up and they dropped me in. And I spent the next day scrubbing with rubbing alcohol to try and get the dye off, but they did it again. So hashtag me too.
I was going to say that's something which certainly I think if we tried to introduce that in the engineering department at the University of Lincoln, there'd be a few. No, exactly. It's not going to work. It's not going to happen. In so many ways, it will be wrong. We talk a lot about music, Jane, and people's inspirations when it comes to their writing. Some people like to listen to soundtracks whilst they're writing. Some people prefer total silence. Some people like lyrics. Some people don't like lyrics. What is your own particular melody? Did you have a soundtrack when you were putting together your latest text, or is it just a case of no? It's I just let it flow and channel the energies from beyond.
So here's the thing. I love it when writers can do this. I can't. As soon as I hear some music that I love, I can't just let it play in the background. I've got to stop and listen, especially if I love those beautiful, clear voices, and I love singers who have sing words that you can actually hear and understand that aren't sort of jumbled in the background. You had somebody on when you had Amy and Mickey on together, and she had a gorgeous voice. I love that. So that's what I like, and I can't certainly can't write when that's on because I wouldn't work. But I do have this little playlist on my phone that I play through speakers. It's called Dancing in the Kitchen, and basically, if there's no one in the house that can see or hear me, it's on full blast, and I literally am dancing in the kitchen and singing at the top of my tone-deaf lungs.
And any particular tracks from Dancing in the Kitchen that you'd like us to feature at the moment?
I'm very eclectic. I love old clear voices, but one of the ones I heard recently, it's also pretty old because you guys are all young up there. It's Take Me to Church.
Hosea?
Yes.
Hosea?
I love that
Yes.
song.
Yeah.
If it's Hosea, that's an
It
amazing
is. And it has the greatest music video of a Russian ballet dancer. I just love it.
My lover's got humor. She's a giggle at a funeral. Knows everybody's disapproval. I should have worshipped her sooner. If the heavens ever did speak, she's the last true mouthpiece. Every Sunday's getting more bleak. A fresh poison each week. We were born sick, you heard them say it. My church offers no absolutes. She tells me worship in the bedroom. The only heaven I'll be sent to is when I'm alone with you. I was born sick, but I love it. Command me to be well. Amen. Amen. Amen.
we are. You're listening there to you Author go. Of the Week with respect to Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting. Of course, we've got ace author and first-generation Canadian Jane Warren with us, as well as Kaylee Mansell and Chloe Rose. Chloe, back to yourself. Any other questions or queries you'd like to put to Jane? Because I don't think you've ever been to Canada, have you, Chloe?
No, but I would love to go. I'd absolutely love to go to Canada.
Come visit.
Yeah. Sorry, what did you say, lovely? Sorry.
Come visit.
Yes, please, please. I need to read your book because it sounds great. So, right, back onto this then. What I'd like to know, is there a key moment in your book that you were really like, oh, yeah, this is a great scene or a great part of the story? Or is there a moment in the book that you most liked that you can tell us about, or are you keeping it a mystery till we read it ourselves?
Well, it's going to be a while before you can read it because they're just trying to sell the world rights now. They'll be going to, right now it's only in Canada, but they'll go to the Frank Book Fair in October.
Hence my question, hopefully, Jane, about Chloe going over to Canada. She needs to, obviously, we need to go to Canada to actually purchase the book. End of.
There you go. Yes. There you go. But I like the question. These are really good questions. There is something that's important for me. It's Nelson Mandela said something years ago in his book, Long Walk to Freedom, and Barack Obama tweeted it in the middle of the whole Trump years of presidency. And I can't quote it, but I can paraphrase it. And it says something to the effect of, no man is born hating. A man learns how to hate. And if he can be taught to hate, he can be taught to love. So the scene for me that I think is the most important is when one of the two main characters, there's Lizzie and David, when Lizzie watches David transforming her school bully into somebody who was hateful, into somebody who becomes a friend. And that line is almost parroted. So but basically
you're inspiring kindness, aren't you? You're inspiring kids to understand, you know, you're right from wrong. I mean, I know it's all subjective, but that's lovely. That's great. It's a positive thing that you're bringing for those kids that do read it. That's lovely. I like that. Continue. I'm enjoying this. Carry on.
Go forth and sprinkle kindness dust over the world. That would be great.
Oh, well, that's lovely.
And what you're a musician, Chloe.
I love writing songs. And you know, when you were saying about, you know, kids and teaching them sort of how to be and like how to treat each other with kindness, I try and sort of I want to just inspire people to have self-belief in the self, you know, to not doubt yourself, because we all have moments in our life where we're thinking, oh gosh, you know, maybe I didn't do a good thing there, or maybe I should have done this, or sometimes being afraid to just be ourselves as well, you know. And in society today, everything's very, you know, with social media, it's about how you look and things like that. But it's not, it's, you know, who are we on the inside? I'm wanting to uplift people. So I hope the music does that in some way. That's my goal. But you've got a lovely goal. And I think that's great. I think that's brilliant that you're bringing that to those kids. So, and adults.
Sounds like we share the same goal.
Yes.
There you go.
Canada, let's go. Let's read the book.
And Chloe, of course, is also a trained drama teacher as well. So she combines her music compositions with teaching young adults drama. So when we actually get to a screenplay version of this, clearly we'll be adapting that as well and using that for the whole sequence, which is made perfect sense. Forgot to mention, of course, she also shares her name with the winning goal scorer of the England Lionesses World European Championship victory recently, because Chloe Kelly scored the goal, and Chloe Rose, of course, is our own. So it all fits together. Enough of such stuff. Jane, do you have any goldfish, or have you ever had any goldfish, and do you intend to actually get some now?
No, no, and no.
Fine.
No, we had them in the pond. We sold the cottage with the pond and the goldfish, and that was the last of the goldfish.
Well, fair enough. Let's hope they remember you. But then again, if you follow certain like routines, they will have forgotten within 30 seconds. What the heck?
Well, actually, having said that, we live on a lake, and there is a whole lot of carp, which is essentially a goldfish. They're not golden anymore, and those suckers are big, and yet they're around all over the place.
Exactly. Kaylee, back to yourself. Any other questions you'd like to put to Jane for the future?
I just wanted to add, I have been to Canada, but I was two, so I have no All my memories are fleeting.
You mean your memory hasn't gone there from a tree? I'm shocked, Kayla.
I remember, I think this is true. I was in a building where the floor is completely glass. And I think it's a tower. I have no idea. I was in, I think I was in
Ottawa. Toronto.
Oh, God. I don't even know. And little me is looking down, no fear whatsoever. And I think old me would be terrified. So I had that bravery when I was younger, not now. But I wanted to ask. So my dad is quite similar to you in that he has a lot of trivia knowledge that he considers useless. And maybe if one day he writes a novel, he'll consider it to be useful. So do you have any interesting trivia on your mind that you could tell us, or something that you think they won't know that? And I'm going to tell them that.
Woohoo! Oh, that's a good question. Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
I'm sorry. I'll tell you one first. So flamingos stand on one leg because they can't find their balance without, and they can stand on one leg for 4 hours. And humans can do it for barely a few minutes, I think. So fantastic. But that's mine.
Interesting enough, I could also throw in the fact that the nearest British relation to the Indonesian parrot is indeed the cuckoo.
Thank you,
Ali. Again, I'm impressed. I think I should be writing all this down. Wow, let me see. I don't know. Maybe I have.
Well, I'm not sure, but whether you could remember this, Kaylee, but I suspect that might have been the tower, and I think that's the backdrop of Toronto that Jane could hopefully confirm. It was confirmed by one of our other Canadian correspondents that's it, and I think it's that tower there that actually will have the glass floor. So that might have traumatized you as a child.
I'll have to revisit. We'll have to go.
I propose a group trip. Come to Quebec this time. I don't speak French, but we can muddle through together. How's that?
Let's do it.
In terms of meeting the audience, of course, Jane, I mean, we are now getting back to the old system. I say the old system, or system where clearly book signings, events being set up and so on and so forth, post-pandemic and so on. Although, obviously, what we're doing is proof that we can reduce our carbon footprint and have a really good interview, which is always wonderful. What are your thoughts on that? Do you like meeting your readership? Do you sort of feel as though, no, stay away? I mean, what's the sort of feeling on that?
Old teacher, long time ago, loved being in the classroom. So I think that would be fun. But I like the reach you get with doing things virtually. And because I live quite rurally in the eastern townships in Quebec, the kind of going to places, if I'm going to go to Toronto, that's 8 hours for me in a car. Montreal's 2 hours away. That's a lot. So for me, I would much prefer to do it by Zoom. Just to be able to talk to more people. I like this face-to-face. I get to see people. I'm seeing people in England. Hi, England. That I hadn't seen before. So it's great. But when you're doing workshops, I'm not so sure I'd be as happy doing a workshop teaching writing this way. I'd much prefer to be there, being able to talk to somebody face-to-face.
And let's stick with technology as an engineer. Some writers still like to use the traditional pen and ink. They still like to make notes in traditional paper ways and so on. Others straight away down to the keyboard. Some use a variation of the two. Are you more of a technophile when it comes to writing, or is it a case of, no, if I had my way, it'd be quill pen all the way?
Huh. No, I'm definitely technical. I love Scrivener. I think whoever invented Scrivener spent a few weeks living in my brain. So let me organize things. Every draft goes in the same version. I think it's brilliant. But when I'm stuck, sometimes you just need to change things up. Some people print it out. I try not to because of paper. But then I'll go sit on the dock or on the boat with a pad of paper and a pen and try and write out my problems. And I don't get great writing that way because that's just me. But I shake loose an idea. So it's just changing the way you look at things.
You could segue into Otis Redding and sitting on the dock of the bay, quite clearly.
It is a bay too, so yes, I could.
Exactly. I think we'll do that.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes.
watching the ships roll in, and then I watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay, 'cause I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change, everything still remains the same. I can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Listen, sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. Listen, 2,000 miles I roam, just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm sitting on a dock of a bay, wasting time.
Jane, in terms of where you are now, and mm-hmm. your younger self, the person who likes spelunking because of the word in National Geographic, what advice would you give the younger Jane? Would you say, actually, your name is irrelevant, you're a wonderful person, it doesn't matter the fact that you call Jane?
I still don't like my name. I think because my sister told me my father named me after Jane Mansfield, and I'm the least Jane Mansfield-like looking person in the whole world, so I found that disturbing. I think my advice is just be kinder to yourself. Because I'm getting to the very first novel, I've done short stories and poetry, but this is my first novel and I'm not a spring chicken. I could beat myself up and say, why didn't you work harder at this when you were younger? But I had such great adventures. I mean, I've lived all over the world. I've traveled all over the world. I've collected trivia that I can't remember when asked. And
that's very useful.
I don't know. Yeah. I have had a really, had a great run, and I think I'm coming to this at just the right time. I have a partner who has stopped working, so it's my turn to work, and he looks after all the other stuff, and I sit up in my airy and I type, and when I don't type, I quilt, because it gives me some productive thing that I can hold in my hand. It takes a long time for a book to come out.
And in terms of the ever-present social media, can we look forward to Jane Baird Warren TikTok videos coming through the system shortly?
I'm looking into that, but I don't know. I actually don't know. We'll see.
Best way to stay in touch with you, presumably, will be janebairdwarren.com. Is that the best way, or are you on Facebook as well?
I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Not on TikTok yet. I've looked at it, but I haven't committed. And how about you guys? Can I find you all there?
Yep, I'm on TikTok, but I've only started it up in the past year because I've been using all the other things, but it's quite popular at the moment. It's just at Chloe Rose Music, Chloe with a Y, and it's on there.
Okay, I'll look. And Kaylee?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. I never use it, but I'll find you on there and we'll have a good chat.
And you can look at Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio, as we know. Jane, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. Really enjoyed it. And it's nice to obviously get that Toronto approach on life and the old connection within that. So we've got two final critical questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
I had a blast. This is great. Thanks, guys.
Well, that's okay then. So second critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again? Will you return in the not too distant future?
I would love to. And I'd love to hear updates on the careers of these two gals here.
Well, in a few moments, you'll actually be able to hear Chloe Rose actually singing Golden Sun, because it's coming up to end this particular piece. Well, we figured if we had the Hoosiers, if we had City on the Dock of the Bay, we need to wrap up with some Chloe Rose. Chloe, would you like to formally introduce yourself singing your latest single? It's released this very day, Jane. It's literally been released today. Off you go, Chloe.
This is Golden Sun.
Step right out of my life.